This is the Iran Human Rights Podcast, a review of major human rights issues by the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran.
The Iranian people are denied the basic freedom to access the information that they want. Because of the actions of the Iranian regime, an electronic curtain has fallen around Iran. A barrier that stops the free flow of information and ideas into the country and denies the rest of the world the benefit of interacting with the Iranian people, who have so much to offer.
By and large, what the Iranian people desperately want is they want to be part of the global community. And that the Iranian government has never been able to offer as to what is a bright future ahead for them.
Iranian people are the heirs to a great and ancient civilization. Like people everywhere, they have the universal right to think and speak for themselves.
That was an excerpt from the trailer for the upcoming short film, Beyond the Electronic Curtain, directed and produced by Tara Kangarlu. Today we'll speak with Ms. Kangarlu about her film and the issue of internet censorship in Iran. Tara, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you start by explaining the term, the electronic curtain?
Yes. The electronic curtain is a term authored by U.S. diplomat Ramin Asghar in 2011. And by the electronic curtain, we're referring to the body of containment that surrounds Iran and the Iranian people as a whole. And if you think about the Iron Curtain and the Cold War era, what was happening to the Eastern Bloc was that behind this Iron Curtain, people were completely detached from the rest of the world, and there was no free flow of information, communication, and free, essentially, access to any mode of contact and communication with the rest of the world. Gee, the same is happening with Iran, but this time it's underneath an electronic curtain, which the government implements by censoring internet, satellite jamming, filtering the internet, filtering different websites, and essentially controlling any sort of A, free access to information, and B, free flow of information coming in and out of Iran.
So what are some of the techniques used by the Iranian government to restrict this access to information?
They filter a lot of sites, and this changes on a daily basis. So one day Google can be filtered, and on the other day Harvard.edu can be filtered, and on the other day a banking system in Europe might be filtered. So on any given day, something can be blocked, which really stops a large sum of people to communicate with the rest of the world, depending on their interests. And that's just for internet use. And then we get to the fact that people, a lot of activists, bloggers, writers, journalists, use this mode, this international mode, to communicate with their colleagues, with their friends internationally and also in Iran. And not only they're dealing with filtering issues, but also they're very much vulnerable to being controlled and monitored and potentially arrested for whatever they're writing or reading or recording. Because, again, it might go against the Islamic rules and regulations.
And does this censorship go beyond simply restricting access to certain websites on the internet?
They implement this idea of the electronic curtain and blocking Iran from connecting to the rest of the world by having control over every aspect of the country's media, publication, information system, internet use, and anything that deals with communication and mass communication at large. Anyone who wants to publish a book, they have to go through the Ministry of Cultural Islamic Culture and Guidance. Anyone who wants to publish a film and produce a film has to do the same. Anyone who wants to write anything has to, again, be approved by the government. Television, Iran's IRIB, is a government-owned entity. The Iranian government controls every single programming that airs in that country. There's no private entity. And even so, even if there are private production companies and they produce the shows privately, again, like we said, they have to go back to the Ministry of Guidance and Cultural Islamic Culture and get approval. So in every sense that you move, in any direction that you move, everything is controlled by the Islamic regime and is contained behind this electronic curtain and electronic wall.
And do they monitor personal cell phones and computers as well?
Absolutely. And the way that works, the cell phones, I mean, we saw back in 2009 after the Green Movement, a lot of cell phones were controlled because they have access to the technology that does that. Because again, the telecommunication system in Iran is, again, a government-owned entity. And let me add this, it could have private parts and it could have private sectors involved. However, again, those work under the larger telecommunication system that's a government-owned entity now, which would make it quite easy for the government to, on any given day, tap into cell phone conversations, landline conversations.
And what about computers?
You know, controlling computers really goes back to the internet use. And the internet can also be tapped in and sort of not only filtered but hacked essentially by the government, and I believe it was maybe 2 years ago or a few years back, I can't quite remember the date, but they created this cyber war police essentially, which is an internet police. So on the internet, they have this group like the Basij that we, for instance, see on the streets. They have a group for internet, specifically.
Okay, quickly, just to give a little background, the Basij is a paramilitary group made up of young civilian volunteers who surreptitiously act as the eyes and ears of the Islamic regime. They were most notably present during the 2009 disputed presidential election, keeping an eye on, quote, dissident gatherings.
Their job is to essentially look at who's doing what and try to find people who are actively participating in any sort of propaganda, any sort of activism, any sort of reform, or whatever activity that they find objectionable. So they have a large budget delegated to that, and they're really after everyone, essentially, who wants to go against their confines of, government and wants to communicate with the rest of the world.
In recent years, we've heard a lot about journalists, academics, and activists who've been imprisoned for their work. Are these cyber-tracking efforts by the government leading to these arrests?
That's a great question. And essentially, yes and no, because the Iranian government is very wise, and it has access to pretty much everything. So you don't necessarily have to be on the internet to reveal your work as a reformist. You know, the contacts and colleagues you have at universities or at work. But again, because we live in an age of technology where everything we do pretty much has to deal with phones, internet, computers, and telecommunication, it's really not hard to be tracked. So yes, the government figured out what these activists are up to. Now, this could have been done in the university that they were involved in, their workplace, or they've been introduced by people who they've been work with, and otherwise on the internet. Yes, their work was tracked on the internet.
During the 2009 presidential election, the opposition movement organized online with sites like Facebook and Twitter, and then the international community really began to take notice after the widely circulated video of Neda Soltan a young woman whose death was captured on video by bystanders and then broadcast over the internet. And the video became a rallying point for the opposition. Do you think the sequence of events led to the government crackdown on internet communication?
Maybe. I'm not going to say yes, because restrictions were always there and restrictions were always imposed on people of Iran, except suddenly in 2009, because of one video, the rest of the world noticed this. And it's really sort of an accidental event that led to the sort of reflection on this issue that the Iranian people are really confined underneath their government's repressive regime. And this was an opportunity that allowed the rest of the world to really see this happening to the people. But no, before that, the same restrictions were intact, and the same capacities and possibilities of satellite jamming and, you know, internet filtering and sort of ambushing any sort of free flow of information existed. They haven't just recently decided to do this. However, after the Green Movement, they definitely became more aware of the dangers of people raising their voices and perhaps opposing the regime. So definitely they made sure that they continue doing what they're doing, and they make it a firm tactic.
Beyond activists and journalists, tell me about how the electronic curtain affects the general public.
A doctor can't have access to a website that he needs, or a student can't communicate freely with another student in South Asia, or an artist can't browse a gallery in London, or a scientist can't share his research with someone from NASA. This is about everyone. This censorship and lack of free flow of information really affects every single layer of the society in Iran, and uproots the basic human rights values that are instilled in any population, which is their right to communicate, their right to have access to communication, their right to interact with people, and they don't have that in Iran. Whether it's Facebook one day, Twitter the other day, Gmail, YouTube, whatever it is, they don't.
Earlier, we played a portion of your trailer where Ramin Asghar said, quote, "What the Iranian people desperately want is to be part of the global community."
Essentially, internet is this escape valve for the people in Iran, for the young population who really want to join a global conversation. They're brilliant, amazingly smart people who want to just raise their voice, share their talents, their aspirations, and discuss their interests with their colleagues in an international community. And they can't, because the government in Iran believes that that's a danger to its existence. So for that, they kill voices, they kill dreams, and they kill the possibility of connecting to the rest of the world for not just the young people in Iran, not the current generation, but the one to come, and the one who is at work right now.
Tara, thanks again for joining us today, and best of luck with your film.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
That was Tara Kangarlu, filmmaker and journalist. Ms. Kangarlu currently works at CNN in Washington, D.C., where she reports on political, national, and international stories. On January 25th, there will be a premiere screening of the film at the Norma Lee and Funger Hall at George Washington University. The screening will be followed by a discussion and Q&A exploring foreign policy strategies on censorship, human rights violations, and a lack of free flow of information in Iran. In addition to Ms. Kangarlu, panelists will include Ramin Asghar, former senior State Department official and foreign policy expert, and Hadi Gaimi, executive director of the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. A keynote speech will be given by Han Bijan Kian, former director of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. To RSVP for the event, email beyondtheelectroniccurtain@yahoo.com. That's all for this edition. For more on this story and other human rights news, you can visit our website at iranhumanrights.org. Join us next time for the Human Rights Podcast. Thanks for listening.